Before we read our portion tonight, I'd like to make another announcement. It'll interest some of you, perhaps others won't know what we're talking about. Just a few months ago, a dear old sister, old Mrs. Murray, passed away. I think she was 95 or 96 years of age, old Mrs. Murray. Great old Christian she was. But we just got word today that her daughter Becky was found dead in her bed this morning. It was a shocker to me, maybe a shocker to some of you. She's only 58 years of age. And she had a brother who passed away very suddenly a few years ago. And I think her father went the same way. I didn't know him. He had died before I came here. Thought I'd mention it for the sake of those of you who know. I haven't got the details, but I suppose it will be in the paper tomorrow morning. Some of you may remember Becky Murray. She was known as Miss M when she was on the WRAL Children's Hour many years ago with a man who was called Uncle Paul. And Becky was on there. She used to give them their singing and their music. She was known then as Miss M. She's now gone to be with the Lord. Let us look to the book of Daniel again in chapter 11. Last time we were on it, we was at chapter 10. And I mentioned that chapters 10, 11, and 12 have got to be studied all together. Chapter 10 is really the preparation of Paul for the vision. Chapter 11 is dealing with prophecies concerning the north and the south in relation to Israel. When you come to chapter 12, you have prophecies concerning the remnant in the end time. Tonight we're going to look at chapter 11. Now, if you look at it, first of all, you'll notice it's a very, very long chapter. 45 verses in the chapter. Now, we certainly are not going to read all those verses, although they're very interesting. But we'll read a few at the beginning of the chapter, and I'll make some comments, and then we'll read some at the end. Chapter 11. Also I, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him. And now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. And a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken, shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven, and not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside those. And the king of the south shall be strong, and one of his princes, and he shall be strong above him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. And in the end of years they shall join themselves together, for the king's daughter of the south shall come to the king of the north to make an agreement. But she shall not retain the power of the arm, neither shall he stand, nor his arm. But she shall be given up, they that brought her, and he that begat her, and he that strengthened her in those times. But out of a branch of her root shall one stand up in his estate, which shall come with an army, shall enter into the fortress of the king of the north, shall deal against them, and shall prevail, and shall also carry captives into Egypt their gods, with their princes, and with their precious vessels of silver and of gold, and he shall continue more years than the king of the north. Now look over at verse 21. And in his estate shall stand up a vile person. Now look again at verse 29. At the time appointed he shall return and come toward the south, but it shall not be as the former or as the latter. Now again look at verse 36. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that that is determined shall be done. Now we'll finish with a reading there at a moment. We'll complete the reading before we finish tonight. Now from the beginning of the chapter right up to verse 35, you take that as one section. Then from verse 36 to the end of the chapter, you take that as another section for this reason. When this was given to Daniel, it was all prophetic. That is, it was in the form of prophecies given by God concerning things that were still future in Daniel's day. But now, from our point of view, as we look back on this, we learn this, that while it was prophetic when it was given to Daniel, that is, it was still future, from verse 1 to the end of verse 35 is no longer prophetic. It's now historic. That is, what was prophesied in these verses has taken place. It has become history. But there's a definite break between verse 35 and verse 36. Now I know it would be very difficult for anyone who is just simply reading through and hadn't been instructed in certain principles, it would be very difficult for you to see that, for the simple reason it doesn't say so. But it's obvious in the study of it there's a definite break here. Now that is something that you find in the Bible at different places, and you've got to learn these things as you go along, and you don't learn them all at once. For example, when we were studying chapter 9 and dealing with the 77s of that great prophecy that was given to Daniel, you remember there came the break at the 6th to 9th week. Messiah was cut off in the 6th to 9th week. Well, in the 70th week normally would follow the 6th to 9th. But while everything has been accomplished right up to that 6th to 9th week, because the Messiah has been cut off, the 70th week has not yet been introduced. So between the end of the 6th to 9th week and the commencement of the 70th week of that famous prophecy from chapter 9, you live in a kind of parenthesis. And in this time of parentheses, God is choosing out a people for himself that we call the church. He's no longer dealing directly with the Jewish nation or with the Gentile nations apart from the Jews, but from amongst the Jews and from amongst Gentile nations, he's drawing out a people to himself. The middle wall of partition has been broken down and they've become one, known as the church. So you learn in your reading of the Bible to distinguish between the Jew, the Gentile, and the Church of God. That same principle holds good when you come to this verse 35 and into verse 36. What you've been reading about up to the end of verse 35 is concerning a vile person who has already been on this scene and has done certain things. That's history. But when you come to verse 36, and the king shall do according to his will, that willful king, as we'll see when we read these verses, has yet got to come upon the scene of time. I mention that, and I hope you understand that, concerning that king that's coming. But now there is this vile king from verses 21 to verse 35. I'll just mention this to you. You can search it out for yourself. First of all, you have his deception in order to obtain power. You have his devices in order to gain victory. Then you have his defilement of the holy place. That man has already been Antiochus Epiphanes. Now, we're not going to go into all the historical things that are said here, and I'll tell you why. Some of you have in your possession at home the volume written by our brother John Phillips in collaboration with a man called Vine, Gary Vines, and they produced that volume dealing with the book of Daniel. Brother Vines, he took up the first six chapters, and John took up the second six chapters. If you have that book at home, I suggest to you that you sit down quietly sometime and take that book. And if you don't have it, by the way, it'd be worth your while just to get a hold of it. I don't know whether there's one in the library or not. I know there's some of John's books in the library that you can have out. Get John's book on Daniel and turn up to chapter 11. I can say this when he's not here, because it's not flattering him when he's present. I'm telling you this now when he's absent. John must have put in a tremendous amount of research for what he has produced in chapter 11. He has made himself familiar with the records of others, with the historical records, and he has fitted them right in to chapter 11. So as you read down through the first 35 verses of this chapter, and it may become a little confusing to you at times regarding the man in the north and the king in the south and the one's daughter who married the one in the north and all that happened, John has condensed it down from all the historical records, and he has written that chapter, and it's intriguing to the very letter. So I would rather that you get it for yourself and read it. I've read other men on this same chapter, but John's to me is the one that grips, written in language which you can understand, and he has his historical records outlined for you. So I mention that so you'll see that up to verse 35, this is now history. Prophecy when it was written, history now in this day and generation in which we live. That being so, we'll interest ourselves now from where we start at verse 36. This, I suggest to you, is still prophetic. Here is something that lies before this world. I can't say something that lies before us, because I believe the church will be raptured before this king comes on the scene and is made manifest. This is dealing now with the time called the time of the end. Here is the willful king. This willful king then is introduced to us. Let us read these verses now and see how this suggests itself to you. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all, but in his estate shall he honor the God of forces, and a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory. He shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. That the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land. Many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape, but he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palaces between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Trust the Lord and bless to us the reading of these verses. A king that is yet to come. Now you know, our lot is cast in what we might call grand yet awful times. During the 20th century, many, many changes have taken place. Things that were said some years ago have had to be changed round. We've seen great political changes. We've seen leaders who have risen up and gone down. Countries that have come to the fore and then gone. And we're not finished yet. Changes are still taking place. One of the greatest changes that I have noticed in my lifetime, way back during World War I, you had the great Bolshevik Revolution, when communism took over in Russia. Russia was a downtrodden nation at that time. Russia, under the rule of the Tsars, had a hard time. And it was easy for those who were teachers of the communistic idea to get the people behind them. It was very easy. If you get working people that are being oppressed, downtrodden, it's easy for someone to come along and stir them up. So the great revolution took place. You can't excuse them for what they did when they caused people to dig their own graves and stand on the edge and just simply shot them and fell into their own graves. Thousands upon thousands of people were destroyed under the rule of communism. Not only so, but it spread its wings. The great USSR. They caused terror throughout the whole earth, you know that. Their great objective was to overtake the world, and communism would rule the whole earth. That was their objective. But it hasn't worked. You see, God in high heaven says, thus far, no further. Back here in the book of Daniel, you remember, it was outlined to Daniel that there would be four successive great empires. There was the Babylonish Empire that was used under Nebuchadnezzar to chastise Israel because of their idolatry and their turning away from God. And God used the Babylonians as the lash against them. But they didn't understand this. They were lifted up with pride. And after 70 years, God says, finish. The Babylonish Empire went down. The Medo-Persians came in and took over. But the time came again. And that's what you read of in chapter 11 here. Time came when they set their eyes over towards Greece, went to battle. And then the time came when the Grecians set their face towards them and went in and destroyed them. The great Grecian Empire took over, but not for long. Alexander the Great just lived in sin and debauchery, died a young man. The Grecian Empire divided up into four, north, south, four different places. And then, for certain reasons, there were those that called in the Romans to help them. And the ultimate thing was, you're the great Roman Empire. But nobody overthrew the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire disintegrated from the inside. Nobody has ever overthrown Britain. But Britain has disintegrated from the inside. Has lost all its colonies. Nobody has yet overthrown the United States. They don't need to. You know, you don't need to put a bomb in a building to destroy it. You only need to put termites in at the foundation. The old devil has planted the termites in this nation as well. We no longer have the power in the world that we had a few years ago. Neither has Britain. Neither has Russia. We've seen Russia come down. The USSR is no longer a terror to the world. God, not even agreeing amongst themselves. And while you still have Russia, you don't have the great USSR. All those little ones that were under their dominion have broken off. Each one crying for their liberty. How is it all going to end? Do we know anything at all about what will take place? Here we find it right here. There's a king who shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods. Think of this man. It's obvious now that the world is looking for a man. Every country today is looking for somebody. Here they're looking for someone to take the White House. In Britain, they look for somebody to lead. In the United Nations, they need a leader. The whole world is crying out for leadership. Give us a man. They'll get him. You see, history has a strange way of going round in cycles. When Israel were being blessed by God, under the rule of God, they said, "We don't like it. We want to be like the other. Give us a king. Give us a king." And poor Samuel, you remember, he wept and mourned before the Lord. He said, "They've rejected me." God says, "No, Samuel, it's not you they've rejected, it's me they've rejected. Let them have their king, but they'll pay the price." And they did. A severe price they had to pay. Here's a man going to rise up again. And Israel will accept this man. See, they haven't got a king just now. And if ever there was a nation that needs to be helped some way or another, it's going to be little Israel. You see, they're surrounded with enemies. Enemies to the north of them, enemies to the south of them, enemies to the west of them, enemies to the east of them. Surrounded by enemies. What can they do? They're looking for somebody. It's here's going to be a man with power. He shall manifest his power. He'll exalt himself. He'll speak against every other power, and he'll speak even against the God of heaven. Now, I'm going to be very candid with you. If you're a Bible student of any standing at all, you'll discover this. There's diversity of opinion as to who this will be. Now, he's not manifest yet. He will be in due course after the church has been taken home. But when you come over to the book of Revelation, chapter 13, that chapter deals with two beasts. These are men, of course, who in character are beastly. The first beast comes out of the sea, but the second beast rises up out of the land. The controversy rages around whether is the first beast of Revelation the Antichrist, or is the second beast the Antichrist? You have good men, intelligent men on both sides. They can all bring up their arguments. I wouldn't fall out with any of them, whether I disagree with them or not. I wouldn't fall out with them because they might be right and I might be wrong. But so far as I'm concerned, the men who say that the first beast is the Antichrist somehow or another are weak when they try to prove their point. For there are certain things they've got to leave out. Now watch this, very, what we've been reading. Verse 37. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers. Now, what does that mean to you? Who is the God of his fathers? You remember that the children of Israel could speak of the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Also, you have the expression, the God of Israel, the God of our fathers. It was a term that was used by the children of Israel. They spoke of the God of their fathers. That in itself seems to suggest to me that this man will be a Jew. Now you see, the man who is the beast that's coming up out of the sea, in the Bible, the nations are likened unto the troubled sea. And here one that's going to arise out from amongst the nations. That is in contrast to the nation of Israel. But the second beast is going to come up out of the land, speaking of Israel. So therefore you can decide for yourself whether it will be the first beast or the second beast that's referred to here. For the simple reason, here is a great king that's coming, and Israel will accept him. But he's going to magnify himself. Now, another thing you must keep in mind, that today, while the nation of Israel is back in the land, and we refer to them now as Jews, all Jews don't believe alike. They don't all believe alike. For instance, when the Lord was here on earth, all the Jews in his day didn't believe the same thing. You had Jews who were called Pharisees. The Pharisees were the most orthodox group of them all. They held to the traditions of their fathers. There was another group called the Sadducees. The Sadducees denied a lot of truth. They didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe there were angels. They didn't believe there were spirits. Didn't believe in the hereafter. No resurrection, therefore eat, drink, and be merry. Tomorrow we die, and that's the end of us. Then you had the Herodians. The Herodians were a political group. They favored Herod's government. So there were different ideas amongst them then, and you have the same thing today. Of all those who are back in the land today, you have certain Orthodox Jews who seem to correspond a little with the Pharisees of the Lord's day. You'll see them when you go to Jerusalem. These are the men you'll find down at the Wailing Wall, dressed up with their cowls or their hats, their long black coats. And you'll see them rocking their bones to and fro at the Wailing Wall and reciting their prayers. These are like the Pharisees, the Orthodox Jews. But then you also have the liberals or the modernistic Jews who deny the very truths of the Bible. They don't believe that there's a coming Messiah. They believe that the thoughts of a Messiah means that they're set up again of the state of Israel. That's the Messiah has come, so far as they're concerned. And then, of course, you've got the apostate Jews. The apostate Jews who deny everything. The Zionists, if you like. All they wanted was something political. So just as they had the differences in the Lord's day when he was here, there's still the differences there today. All the Jews there don't believe alike, but they tolerate each other because they've got a common objective. That is to defend the land and to remain in that part of the world. They've got a home. And so they tolerate each other's differences for the sake of being together. But you see, the time will come when they want somebody that will be able to give them some support, somebody that will be able to protect them from what? From the people of the north and those in the south. Now, the south is obvious that it's Egypt. The north is Syria. And these are the two, up till recently, of course, folks said all this from the north is Russia. But the fact of the matter is, Russia is not the menace now, at this time. But there will be those from the north and the south who will be determined to overthrow Israel. They'll need protection. The protection they'll get is from the West. Now it's true there's going to be two leaders. There will be the political leader and there will be the religious leader. You see, it will be necessary to have a religious leader, because if the Jews are going to accept him, he'll have to come back to their way of doing things. It's obvious also that the Jews are going to institute once more their form of ritual. They are going to have the offerings, the sacrifices, and they're going to have a holy place. Now, I don't know where that holy place will be actually. I believe it will be around Jerusalem. Whether it will be on the site of the present Mosque of Omar, I don't know. That could go up in a night's time if they want it. But whether they'll go and destroy that and build a temple right from that site, I don't know. It may be they'll build it down at the Wailing Wall, or just a little bit off from the Mosque of Omar. But it's obvious they're going to have a place that they'll call the holy place. And again, they'll commence with their sacrifices. Then they'll need a leader, a supporter, a protector. He is the one. But he will not regard the God of his fathers. He'll put on a face. He'll pretend to be their helper. Then again, but in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. Now, we've had a lot of these kind of men, and here's one who's going to be one of those that wants force. And a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver, and with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. Now, who is this god that he's going to enter into an agreement with? Do you remember the occasion when Satan began the temptation with Christ? And he came to the final thing. He says, "Now, if you'll only bow down and worship me, I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. I'll give you the power if only you'll fall down and worship me." He's a man who's going to be prepared to hand himself over to the one that's called the god of this age, Satan himself. When you come to the book of the Revelation, we'll learn there that his power is given to him by the dragon. And that's one of the names for Satan, the enemy. And the dragon will give this man his power. And that's why he's able to rule with the iron hand. He shall enter also into the glorious land. That's Israel. Many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. Who are they? Well, they live over the other side of Jordan. The Edomites were the descendants of Esau. Esau was the father of the Edomites. You know who the Moabites are and the Ammonites. They were descendants of Lot through his two daughters. They're living over the other side. Why aren't they destroyed at this time when the others? Because God has a way in which he's going to deal with them. God will deal with them in due time. You see, God is superintending it all. But now hurry, time's almost gone. But watch this, verse 43. "But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. He shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain." He's going to make his headquarters somewhere right there around Jerusalem. Yet, the details are passed over here. It brings you right to the end. Yet, he shall come to his end and none shall help him. When you go to the book of the Revelation, this brings you right up to that point where the crowds will be gathered together in that little land. The Middle East, you know, is the key to world situations. When they'll come from the east, from the north, from the south, from the west, gathered together in the valley of Megiddo. And that's where it will start. What a slaughter it will be. But just when they're ready to overthrow the remnant of Israel, the Lord shines forth from his glory, Revelation 19. And the end shall come. What will happen to this man? The beast and the false prophet will be taken alive and cast into the lake of fire. The devil who instigated them will be bound with a chain, cast into the bottomless pit. And the Lord shall reign for 1,000 years. Wednesday night, we'll get the details when we go into chapter 12, God willing. Shall we pray? Father, we thank Thee for another day spent with Thy people. Thank Thee for bringing them safely back from mountaintop. We pray, O God, that they may have been helped. Then we ask for those tonight who are grieving the loss of loved ones. We commit and commend them to Thee. For those who have been mentioned to us today, who are laid aside in sickness and others seeking to attend to them, God strengthen them and uphold them in the time of trial. Remember us here now and what lies before us in this week. Our brethren who have their businesses to attend to and some who have to go to the office and to the work. Be with them. Uphold them. Help them to bear a bright testimony for Thee wherever they are.